This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. It's time for Sci-Fi for Chicks to go back to Gotham in this episode. Sooner or later, God will cut you down.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down.
My God. Jack.
Hey, Erwin. Where's my stuff?
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Sci-Fi for Chicks. That's right, I'm calling this episode a song based on the first of the two episodes we're going to talk about because that's the one I really liked. Alex probably is a little bit more gracious on the second episode than I'm going to be, which is kind of odd, a kind of odd juxtaposition. My name is Heather, and I am joined, as always, by my podcasting partner in crime. Well, not as always. Because, Alex, what happened to your internet?
For reasons that are beyond me, my internet company decided to run their cables underground. And I live near the river, which is, well, a place to live. It's nice here. But then when it's raining or there's snow that's melting, somehow, I have no idea how, the cables that give me the one thing that I can't live without, the internet, got flooded. And there was insert technical bubble that I don't understand in neither of the languages that I speak. And the internet went out and it continued to be out for a week because they had to track the source of the flooding in the ground and the cables. I have no idea. I now have a month of free internet because they were very, very sorry once I called them and yelled at them.
They should be because I was getting worried. Yeah. I'm like, why is Alex not letting me know what's going on? And it's because you couldn't let me know to let me know that you couldn't let me know.
Yeah.
And so at least we know that this podcast does have the Sci-Fi for Chicks seal of authenticity. Technical problems, but not on my end this time. This is a European technical problem, folks, not me.
Hey, sometimes it has to be on me, and I am taking the blame, so I apologize to our faithful listeners who missed us, no doubt.
You better have missed us. I was thinking about doing the podcast on my own and just like leaving
no.
Big empty pauses where you would have spoken. Insert Alex opinions here. But as I'm already trying to do ADR work on another podcast that we recorded where my audio totally flooped up, and I'm having to re-record all of my audio, yay, I decided not to. I wanted to wait for you because I need to vent with you. And there's definitely some venting. There's some oh joy moments, and there's also some venting moments in these two episodes. And I could not do that without you, Alex. So let's get right into it. We're going to be talking about two episodes of Gotham so we can catch ourselves up. We're going to be talking about Gotham Season 1, Episode 12, What the Little Bird Told Him, and Gotham Season 1, Episode 13, Welcome Back, Jim Gordon. Now, instead of going through the episodes bit by bit, which actually I don't think we ever really do, Alex, I think we just jump around anyway. We're going to kind of hit the different character points and kind of mash things together. And we are going to start with some of the things that were a little less impressive, but we don't want to totally ignore. And I think the first one that is probably the least impressive, and I'm really sorry to say this because I like her and I really want her to be a great character, was our Barbara scene where she shows up at the doorstep of her parents with her luggage and the butler doesn't know her and her parents are cold and trying to get insight on her backstory. Okay, Alex. Yeah. Start the venting.
Let me just say that this better pay off in a great plot twist or great backstory that we get sometime either later this season or in season 2, which better be there. Because otherwise it's just, oh look, something happened. And I don't care, which is painful to me, because mm-hmm. I love Barbara, and I love the actress, and I love everything she did early on. It's like the definition of, you started so well, and then what happened?
Yes, such great potential that she had. And this, you know, this scene reminded me a lot of that, ooh, shocker scene when Barbara... at the end of the episode when Barbara woke up in Montoya's bed and we're all supposed to go, ooh. But it felt like they didn't want it to be the beginning of the episode because they were only doing this one scene and never coming back to her. It felt like they thought it's not shocking enough to go at the end of the episode.
So let's put it in the middle.
But we have to do it. We have to put it in somewhere because her story is coming up soon, maybe. Hopefully. And they just stuck it in here and I didn't care at all. At all.
No. It's just, I don't know. It feels a little like putting a scene here and there for a character that the writers don't know what to do with. It's like when you have the beginning of the story and you know how it ends, with her marrying Jim and having at least two babies that we know of. One of them is a girl. But you have no idea what comes in the middle, and it's like trying this one and trying this plot, and it doesn't work, so let's try a different one. And I have to say, I prefer it when the writers have an actual plan. So I am holding out hope that there is a plan. We just don't see it because, I don't know, we're not smart enough. Mm-hmm. I am willing to say to hope that because, come on, Barbara, she's so awesome. Do not waste her.
Well, and especially when you have this character that now I know we've had time passing because we have had the thing where it's been at least 4 weeks that we had from, you know, so we know that it's not just a day or two later. But to throw that scene in and not even have, like, say, Harvey say, so how's Barbara? Yeah, for some reason that, like, everybody is just kind of forgotten about her. And there's no reason to insert anybody that might know about her or talk about her. Like, there's not a reason for Renee to be in the story right now for these two episodes. And it just seems so random and so pointless. And it made me kind of upset that the Barbara character was there. I'm like, almost like, let's just get rid of her. If you're going to do this to her, I'd rather just get rid of her. Do something good, I mean, or get rid of her.
Let's face it, Bruce wasn't in several episodes. And there was no explanation for him not to be there until he showed up. Couldn't they do the same thing with Barbara? Just, if you don't have something for her to do, can't you just not put her in the episode and then when her storyline is coming up, put her there and just have a scene where she talks to somebody about moving in with her parents and how difficult it is. Come on. I am okay with exposition. Some things just have to be explained, you know, by talking. It's okay. Exactly.
Well, I think one of the biggest tells about how unimportant this was is in looking up several different recaps of the episode. So I could refresh my memory, because it's been 2 weeks since I've seen this episode. And so I'm like, I'm trying to remember. I almost completely forgot about that scene, because she isn't mentioned in any of the recaps that I read. So to not even say Barbara went back to her parents in a recap that people aren't trying to limit to 140 characters, that just kind of tells you it was an utterly pointless scene.
Yeah.
Utterly pointless. You brought up another... less important, but at least feeling more organic situation with Bruce and Alfred and how they disappeared, but we do now have the reason that they disappeared after that whole thing with the assassin. Alfred just got the heck out of Dodge and they went to their chalet in Switzerland.
Yeah, and this is how you handle characters you don't need for a storyline for a couple of episodes. Mm-hmm. I don't need an explanation on why he is missing. Sure, I wondered, where was Bruce? Because they established a certain pattern, right? Mm-hmm. He was always in the episode. There was some little, at least, you know, tiny thing with him. And suddenly, there's nothing. So I did wonder, where is Bruce? Did they kidnap him or something? Did the actor got grounded? I don't know. He's young enough to get grounded, right? But I wondered, but I didn't mind because, well, what would he add to the whole thing, right?
Right.
And now he was back trying to find Kat and, you know, support my little canoe.
little canoe, that's right.
Yeah.
Hashtag and canoeing. We're not shipping, canoeing. We're canoeing.
Yeah, they are too young to be shipping them. But yeah, and there it was, you know, exposition. I got out of town like you told me, Alfred. Can we find Kat now?
And it made total sense, too, that after everything that happened, that Alfred, with the character they've already set up with Alfred, that he would just do something like, hey, we're leaving. And
exactly.
They didn't have to spend, like, an hour talking about why it was. It was just those few little sentences that let us know he'd been gone, he was back. And it made sense, and it felt really organic. Because like you said, I missed him because I got used to seeing him every episode, but I knew that he didn't fit into those episodes that he wasn't in. It wouldn't have worked out right. It would have been forced. So I don't like that they're forcing the women's stories into the show. It's like, we have to force them in there because we got to have the women in there. But they're handling the Bruce story, I think, much better. And even Ivy, like how they wove Ivy in just for that little itty bitty bit, which, can I tell you, she looks so much older than she really is. Like, her face looks like she's been through a lot.
Yeah, kudos to the makeup department.
Yeah, she still creeps me out looking at her. I'm with Alfred. You know,
you're not the only one. Alfred took one look at the girl and it was like, yeah, Master Bruce, let's just move to the side, like away from the crazy girl. Like, And I tell you, in 10 or 20 years, when Ivy shows up as Poison Ivy, Alfred will be like, told you so. This is, and you owe me $20 that I paid to the crazy girl 20 years ago.
Exactly. Well, and we have the whole reason why he made Alfred give over that $20, because he was trying to get in touch with Kat to give her her little snow globe. Aww.
Aww. Canoeing. Hashtag canoeing. So hard.
Hashtag canoeing. What did you think about that scene? Because Kat comes back in and everything seems to be, you know, pretty much the buddy-buddy, they were canoeing nicely along there. And then when he was like, and you could move in, and she flips.
And I was like, Bruce, darling, maybe you get game when you grow up, but you don't have it yet. Mm-hmm. And it was like, do not ask this girl to basically move in with you. What is this? Did you meet her before? This is Kat. In what bizarre universe does this end well?
Yeah. Well, especially when you can see the look on her face that it wasn't her moving in for protection or because he wanted her to be around more or anything like that. It was like so she could be in a better place. Yeah. And that I saw her instant, the defenses go up. What's wrong with where I live? What's wrong with who I am and how I exist and all this?
Exactly.
You know, I've done pretty well for myself. And then she just flipped the script and, you know, telling him that she didn't really see the killer's face and totally
Which
shattering
is such a lie.
That dream.
I'm saying this now.
Okay.
Because I believe that she basically lied. Mm. There is a chance where she actually said the truth, that she didn't see anything, but I'm thinking it's a lie.
I think it is too.
Yeah.
She's pushing the buttons. She knows what buttons to push with Bruce, and he just pushed her buttons about how she lives. She's now pushing the buttons, his buttons about that. And he's just, he's just still so sweet and innocent, he doesn't see that. He doesn't see that that's what she's doing. Alfred, I think Alfred wants to believe that she doesn't know. So that
but he... I saw doubt on his face. Come on.
Yeah. I think he knows she knows, but he wants to believe she doesn't know so that he can believe that maybe there's no reason for them to be around each other anymore, that there won't be any danger there with that. And Alfred, we've talked about his parenting skills before. He's a good buddy-buddy, but yeah, not the best parent. But I do like he comes in there, okay, we can keep crying or we can get a broom. And it'll get him moving forward. So I think we are showing the Alfred Bruce good connection there. So it seems that we like the Bruce Alfred thing much better than the Barbara scene there. So kudos to the rich kid. The final, well, you know, it's, I guess the money. Well, no, wait, Barbara's rich too.
That's yeah, but
the battle of
male
Richie's.
Privilege and all that. Yeah.
I'm going for Bruce, much better. And Bruce has the better butler.
Oh, definitely.
Than Barbara's parent, like, I'm their daughter. Ah. Sorry, I thought that was funny. I'm like, yeah, the butler doesn't even know who you are, so there's no pictures or anything around. Anyway, so in the Battle of the Richies, we give it to Bruce. Let's move on to our final minor story, which in a way ties into one of the big things, but we're going to deal with it a little separately. And that's the ongoing, hey, we've got to get Ednigma into the story, and oh look, he's got a crush on Miss Kringle.
Yeah, and it's a painful one.
So painful.
Mostly because it's painful to watch, and I cringe every time I see them. Because he's, I don't know what the actor does, because I've seen him in photos when he isn't in character. And the thing is, he looks the same. Like, it isn't such a transformation like with Penguin, right? It's like this minimal thing, like glasses and stuff. So he basically looks the same. But when I see him on Gotham, he's creepy. And not in a Penguin kind of way. In a, oh my god, pervert alert. He's the guy who would probably, I don't know, peep through windows into college girls' dormitories or something. He's creepy.
Very much so. And I feel bad because, you know, like, he's trying to do these cute little things like the thing with the cupcake and the bullet. And it's like, hey, for him, that's like, I'm really inventive and I'm really trying to show you this compliment. And I'm like, yeah, if I got a red velvet cupcake with a bullet in it, I think I'd be...
No matter how cute he tries to be, he comes off as majorly creepy. And I'm like, oh my god.
Very
oh my god.
Much so.
Girl, you work at the police station. Tell somebody. I don't know. Invest in a rape whistle. Something. Because this is majorly creepy.
Very much so. And that, in that first one, the first episode, she was kind of... I almost want to go, come on, I get it, he's creepy, but he's trying to be sweet. And then we have the turnaround in the second episode when he gives her the greeting card, and then Flask comes in and does his whole macho, you stupid guy, you know, you don't know how to do it. And she comes back and apologizes to him. I was like, okay, get, you know, give him a little bit there, maybe not help him so much become Riddler.
Yeah. But it's like, I liked the way she apologized. She apologized for what was actually not, you know, not nice and mean and all that. But when he saw, he tried to see more into it and tried to ask her out, it was like, no, stop speaking right now. This is where our interaction ends. Of course, you know, he proceeded to be extremely creepy by saying, oh yeah, yeah, totally. She's into me.
Yeah, there's hope.
I
did like that moment when she's like, no, don't speak. Don't speak. Just period. Stop it right there. I thought that
there was so many times
that I've wanted to use that too. It's like, oh, I wish I had thought about that. No, just leave it there. We're good. We're at a good place.
Yes, let's end this in a good place, but do not proceed any farther. And that piece of, there's hope. I was like, and we're back to creepy. Thank goodness she didn't hear that.
Okay, can I tell you the actress? I've really got to say, she has just got the most beautiful skin. I have to make an little aside. Stunning eyes and skin, and somebody that can wear those kind of glasses and have their hair like that and still look really good.
Hmm.
Give her props. She needs to head over to Agent Carter and do a little bit more.
Yeah.
Work over there. Where is this going to go, do you think? Because they're really pushing that, there's got to be something that's going to be come up this season, because with the way they're continually dropping this.
I'm going to tell you what I don't want, and it's for her to somehow magically, miraculously want to start dating him because he's a creep. So I don't want that to happen, but I'm afraid that it's not going to end well for her. The way I see what they're trying to do is for her to be one of the catalysts of him going dark. Because, come on. Apart from every other way for a villain to become a villain, perceived slight from those he cared about is usually right there on the top of how a villain becomes a villain. So she's probably going to be an additional factor of how he went from this creepy creep that creeps to an actual villain. But it's not going to end well for her. Either way, she's going to get hurt, she's going to, I don't know, get killed. It just, the odds are not in her favor, let's just say.
Right. I don't think so either. She's... It's just really not boding well, because she is not only spurning him, but now we've seen her have that empathy for him.
Mm.
And by having that, like you said, we've opened the door and he thinks there's hope. So that gives him a tie to her more, so that when she does shut him down again, or when something else does happen, or if something happens to her and, you know, by somebody else's hands, I can see that being a catalyst for him.
To react.
And yeah, I'm not exactly sure how that'll go, but at least Ed is having a little something more to do besides come in and look at the crime scene and tell a funny little riddle.
Yes.
And have Harvey shut him down. I don't want any more of your riddles.
Yeah, because that's what every character should have. Additional creep points. That's exactly it.
And Ed's got him. Ed's got him in spades, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so those were our three more minor stories that were kind of dealt with in these two episodes. Let's get to the main course, because you want to end with Jim.
Mm.
My favorite part is going to be this next part we're talking about, which is our whole Fish Falcone, Penguin, Butch, Liza, Zaz, Maroney, the whole crime family side of this. And this was just such a fabulous story that, like I said, 2 weeks later, I still remember that over the episode that I just watched this morning. Let's start with our favorite baddie that is sometimes not our favorite baddie, because he moves forward and goes back and moves forward and goes back. The Penguin.
I don't even... Okay, what... Let's just say that Penguin did not win many points with me in those two episodes. Like, seriously. When he got seriously injured in that last episode,
and then suddenly,
it was. But what came next was a serious WTF moment for me when he woke up in the ambulance, you know, started mumbling about meeting Falcone. Then he passed out again.
Yeah.
And then when Maroney questioned him and Penguin fibbed like only Penguin can, I was like, okay, first of all, what in the name of everything that is holy came over the writers that they thought this was a good idea to pursue? Because this was the most contrived, unbelievable, idiotic plot twisty thing in the history of everything. Come on. I was like, I was watching this and I was going, no, seriously, this, I didn't, somehow what got onto my screen was not a Gotham episode. I was being punked, right? Because, sure, I'm not high profile enough to get punked, but I had to be punked to, you know, for anyone, me including, to believe that this was actually a thing that happened and we're supposed to buy. Come on. It's just...
Yeah.
I give up.
Yeah. Well, and it tied in so much with, and I know we were originally thinking about talking in this in the gym section, but I'm going to pull it up in there. It was a disappointment on top of another disappointment that shouldn't have been a disappointment,
yeah,
because they tied the Penguin Maroney story in with Gruber, who, when we left him at the end of Rogue's Gallery, we're like, oh my gosh, you know, this is going to be just so awesome, and Jack Gruber is just so menacing and evil. And his whole story in this, and his trying to go after Maroney, and then Penguin getting caught in the crosshairs of trying to go to Falcone and getting electrocuted and then being stuck with all, it was just so anticlimactic. And Penguin would have these little moments where, like, he was trying to shine through and then it fall so far back again. We love you, Robin Lord Taylor. You're doing a fabulous Penguin. The writers need to give you a lot bit more. To make sense. I mean, of the three, if I put Penguin, Maroney, and Gruber together, the one to me that came out on top of that three is Maroney.
Oh yeah, with every episode, I loved him more and more and more and more. And it was like, no, seriously, Penguin is my favorite. Penguin is supposed to be my favorite. We love Penguin. Mm-hmm. We love the actor. Mm-hmm. What is going on? That episode, as far as Penguin was concerned, was such a mess. I want to blank it out, you know, bleach it out of my brain and forget about it, so that I can concentrate on the better part of that particular storyline, which is Falcone, Fish, and Liza.
But even moving Penguin into the next episode, the Welcome Back, Jim Gordon, I mean, the thing I kept seeing, you know, he's at Fish's club. And he's with his mom, and they're dancing, and they're celebrating. And I'm thinking the entire time I'm looking at this, are you now openly on Falcone's side? Maroney is still out there. You're supposed to be a Maroney's man. And what's going on? And again, it just, I'm like, you're not being smart. You have this hubris that you're just, you know, you just are not thinking, and I don't like that. I mean, I get they wanted to get Penguin somehow at Fish's club so Fish could come back and do her little thing, but it just was so not what Penguin should be doing, which I'm taking the V away from his name. He wants to be the Penguin. Yeah, you're just Penguin.
No.
Because you're not being smart.
He has to earn the V. But seriously, yeah. I think Penguin's problem isn't that he
hashtag
isn't
earn the
smart.
Thee.
Yeah. The Penguin's problem isn't that he is not being smart. Penguin's problem is that he is not being consistent.
Yeah.
No, seriously, I am so disappointed with what they're doing with him and how they're carrying him that I refuse to think about it. The only thing that was good out of Penguin of this two episodes was his favor to Jim, because it added to Jim's journey that we will talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, let's just forget Penguin was there, because it was so annoying and inconsistent with everything else that, nope, not doing it.
Man, like you're saying, that moment with Jim, when he's like, oh, what do I owe you? And he goes, friends don't owe friends, silly. And I'm like, I liked it because he believes it, but he also is going to feel Jim. You know, there is going to be that tie back and forth, but he's so diabolically villainy, super villainy, that he doesn't really see that. Yes, of course, he's in my pocket now. Jim sees it, but Penguin doesn't. Yeah, it was just very inconsistent. That jumping at the end when Fish comes back into the club and he's on his, kneeling down and kissing her boots. And I'm like, it's Fish and Butch. And she's wanted by Falcone. And you're good on Falcone. Why are you being so scared? So it just... I don't know what to say because he has such moments of really greatness in him. And then I don't know. I don't know what the word is.
Let's move on to what we really want to talk about.
Well, let's move on to somebody before we get into the big, big one, somebody in that group that I am loving more and more and more and more the more I see him. And not just because he responds and retweets and favorites some of my live tweeting when I'm on there, but this is how you know that I like him, because I know his name. Drew Powell, who plays Butch.
He's the most awesome character and person ever. Seriously, I love Butch. I know I'm not supposed to love Butch, because he was supposed to be like this completely minor, irrelevant character. But oh my god, he grew on me and I loved him. I loved him. You remember how I was obsessing whether or not, oh my god, please don't kill Butch. Please don't turn on Fish. And my entire, break down and melt down when I thought, no, Butch, you cannot do this to me. Do not break my heart. Mm-hmm. And oh my god.
Well, that scene from a few episodes back where we thought, oh my gosh, is Butch going to turn? Is Butch going to turn? And then he shows his utter loyalty to Fish. And then throughout these two episodes, that's what he is really utterly loyal. It's because of Butch that Fish still has a chance to be anything. I'm loving how he's being brought out. And that is something rare on this show, that we're liking how somebody is growing and changing.
Yeah, but when Fish was finally making the play, he was the perfect henchman. Mm-hmm. And at the end, when it all went bad, I was like, oh my god, please don't kill the henchman. Henchmen usually die first. So that was the stress. And in this week's episode, when he just went all Superman, because he was basically a superhero in this episode. You gotta agree with this.
Ripping that grate off the window so that she can make it out.
Yeah, and now I'm like, I don't want Butch to suffer at the hands of Victor's ass, because he's one big mother. Tego. Anyway, so I don't want Butch to suffer. Mm-hmm. But I don't want him to be dead. And I don't know. I want to steal him and hide him in my shiny happy place to make sure that he is safe and, cared for, because he is awesome and he needs to be alive for Bullock to find him and save him and, deliver to Fish.
You know, Butch reminds me of another character from another show that we podcast on, Orphan Black. With Christian Brune, who plays, oh my gosh, I just forgot Allison's husband's name.
Donnie,
thank you.
Donnie.
Because I'm thinking of his name. He reminds me of him, where we started out just going, yeah, whatever. He's expendable. We don't care about this character.
And now it's, do not touch him.
Do not touch him. I love him. He is wonderful. So, you have to follow both these guys, because they are really fabulous. The way they're able to make you empathize with them and care for them and root for them when they're being bad guys too. I love Butch.
But you know what? I think what we should do, actually, the both of us, is to start hating him, because it's his fault we care. And you know how hurt and sad we're going to be if anything happens to this character? This is going to be a nightmare. I am obsessing over a minor character on a show that he is probably not important enough to survive the season, for God's sake.
I think he's going to be. I mean, I think we've killed off so many of the mobster types. And, I mean, he's the only one left on... Well, okay, Harvey. Harvey and Butch are the only two left on Fish's side, really.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we had that little reveal there at the end of the episode with Harvey sending Fish off in his jacket and them kissing.
Yeah, but Butch, find... You know, hashtag.
But I'm more tied to Butch because Butch is like, Fish, I gotta save you and I will throw my life down for you, but I'm only gonna get shot in the leg.
He was amazing and I would be okay talking about how amazing he is for the entire podcast because frankly, I love him and my love for him knows no bounds.
And here's my little plug for him. We're taking the away from Penguin because he doesn't deserve it. But if you do at the Drew Powell, that's his Twitter handle there. And he deserves his the. He earned his the.
Oh, yeah. So. He did. We are officially on his side no matter what happens. Butch can do no wrong.
So writers, don't mess with Butch or you're going to have to deal with us. Okay, the other half of Butch...
Yeah, his better half.
Actually, I would say between the two of them, he's probably the more feminine half. The female half is Fish, and that gets us into, the story that I loved. Fish, Falcone, and Liza. Fish makes her move and kidnaps Liza, and, yeah, of course, I love how she does the, you know, the voice thing to first... Like some random person kidnapped Liza to Falcone, and then Falcone's like, yeah, I know it's you. Just put down the pretenses. And she's going for him to just quietly step down and hand over everything to her. I mean, she's tried these other methods, and things aren't working, and people are getting killed, and she just goes all, basically full frontal. You can retire, you can take Liza and have a happy little life, just give me everything and sign it over. And he seemed... to acquiesce. Why did Falcone almost give in to Fish's deal of just letting
because
him go away and her take everything?
I think he genuinely cared about Liza. He did, and I think he would be willing to step down if it meant she would get, you know, to live a happy life or something. They did construct the whole thing with the flower to kind of visualize that he cares. He kept looking at the flower like she did say at the beginning of the episode before her kidnapping that she wants to stay. And it was at the time where he had no idea that she betrayed him. So he was living in this conviction that there is a chance for her and for him with her to have something relatively normal and good. And I think that was the reason why he was willing to, step down and just make sure that Liza was safe. Mm-hmm. But once he realized that it was all a lie... it was like, back to mob business. And maybe the turnaround was too jarring, too sudden for me. This sudden change, you know, from, I'm going to step down to, the king is back, baby. Maybe it was too much, too quickly, but I still enjoyed it. I really did.
I loved it. I like that they started it with an incredibly teeny tiny flashback scene of him to his childhood. So that exactly what we've been suspecting all along, that Liza resembled his mother. we see that, it really was, in Falcone's mind at least, this spot on. And so we had that tie. We had this where it was a different kind of love. It wasn't, you know, like, remember when Fish was surprised that he had never made a move on her?
Yeah.
That he was, you know, just watching her bake and talking and going on walks and things like that. And Fish was like, what? It kind of helped solidify how deep he felt for her, that it wasn't just this physical attraction, that he was really tying into things. And I think, you know, he was probably getting tired seeing how many of his ventures were exploding in his face and people were betraying and all this. And when it came to Liza can live and live with me and you can have it, you know, sure, I'm done. And I thought that was pretty well done. And I like the fact that on Liza's end, we actually saw more from her that I think she wouldn't have just played the lie for a little while. Like Fish was saying, oh, you just have to be with him for a while and then you can leave, just so he thinks that everything's kosher.
Yeah.
I think she actually would have stayed. I think she'd actually turned to Falcone. Not against Fish, but it's like I don't want to be that. I want to be this with him.
Yeah,
that's what I read.
I think at some point the lies she was telling stopped being lies or stopped being such big lies.
Mm-hmm.
Because you gotta say, Falcone is a charming guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you spend enough time with him, and he's polite and charming. I don't think a girl like Liza, or any girl for that matter, screw a girl like Liza, any girl, would, you know, remain, like, unattached. So, I have to agree with you. Yeah, she would probably stay. She would probably stay.
Yeah.
And, like, just, I don't know, will herself to forget that it started as a ruse?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she would get her happily ever after. He would get her his happily ever after. All would be good. But then someone had to go and destroy this little, you know, shiny happy place. Oh,
Penguin.
Well.
Yeah. Which well, we is, knew by it the was going to come yeah, out that Penguin
nice.
Was going to do this
oh,
at some point.
Yeah. I know.
It just seemed so. Not that it seemed out of place, but it did definitely, again, it's like Falcone, he's doing this for him. Because if you retire, if you let Fish take over, where does that leave Penguin? You know, where, what, he's totally up a creek again. Because he then has to be Maroni's guy, and he has to be, you know, has to go back into being an underling, and he wants to be somebody more powerful. So when he tells about Liza, and he's, you know, Falcone's like, no, it's not. You saw those seeds of doubt, exactly what Penguin said was going to happen when he told Liza that. It's like, I don't have to have proof. I just have to plant that seed of doubt. And he did, but good. And I remember the first episode that we did, back when we haven't done like Best Baddie or anything like that. I remember saying that for me, Falcone was Best Baddie because he's never going to get it again. When we had him come face to face with Fish and Liza, and that moment when you could see this quiet rage. I mean, it's not like he was shouting. He wasn't throwing things. He wasn't punching anything. It was just very controlled.
Mad.
It was just, you know, very up like that, and then grabbing her neck and then squeezing. It was such deep anger in him that it couldn't be shown any other way but then just straight through him into her and bye-bye.
But you know what? Usually I'm very against killing female characters because we've seen enough of that.
Yeah.
But I gotta tell you, when he sent Fish and Butch away so that other people could carry out his orders to get Fish to apologize, quote-unquote, and to get rid of Butch. And those two could be dealt by sending other people, delegating. But Liza, her betrayal was so deep and so personal that she couldn't be handled by somebody else.
Right.
It was so so intense, so poetic in a way, because this was his hurt manifesting. Like, she hurt him personally to the bone, you know, shot him through the heart. So he had to be the one to punish her.
And I like, though, it was also, he even says, though, I'm sure you're a really nice girl.
Yeah.
He understands that she has been manipulated, but the fact that she's been in his inner circle, and she's now seen things that Fish hasn't seen, that the softer side of Falcone. Fish knows the story, because that's why she, you know, the whole, my sainted mother. So this is our second sainted mother quote when it comes to Fish and Falcone. They both know their mother stories, obviously. And him knowing that she knew all those buttons to push and set Liza up, I don't think he thinks that Liza knew all the backstory and everything. Liza just had the Cliff Note version of what to do. But the fact that Liza was in his inner circle, the fact that she was right there, that you know, it was so close to him, that betrayal, it's like, Fish, I'm sending you this message too, but Liza, I'm sorry, you gotta go, because you just hurt me too much. It was so powerful. And I'm with you. I don't like that gratuitous just killing of a female character, but I was like, yeah, Liza, sorry.
This was such a powerful message, and so brilliantly acted by both of them.
Oh, yeah.
I was just sitting there and jaw on the floor. So amazing.
I almost saw in her face, too, not that she was ready for it, but that she saw how much she really had hurt him. Like, she had an idea, but actually seeing that in him, I think there's that flicker, just that quick little flicker before her, oh my God, I'm dying face came in, that she understood exactly how deeply she had hurt him. And the thing I think this opens up for him is we've actually seen, for the most part, that kinder, gentler Falcone. Mm. He's been, you know, the nice Don. Really, you know, he's been the gentleman. He's, you know, he's handled everything very cool and businesslike and had this. He doesn't have that anymore.
No.
He's killed that tie, that whole mother thing. He has killed it. And I'm actually excitedly scared about what we might see from him. Writers, don't disappoint me.
Yeah. This is going to be awesome. I'm telling you.
It is. It's going to be really, really great. And now that we have Fish on the run, so I guess we're not going to see her for, 10 minutes? Because that's how they do these great on the run. I have to get out of Dodge.
Yeah.
10 minutes.
So later, next episode, Fish is back. Having done the run. So that's probably how it's going to play out.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I gotta say, it was there. I didn't expect them to, wrap it up, because technically it's wrapped up. And now all Fish has is a vendetta against Penguin. Because I don't think she hates Falcone. She played a game and he won. So I don't think she's going to hold a grudge against Falcone. No. Because that was what happened between them. Was fair. Everything worked out according to the rules that they have for things like that. But Penguin, ooh. I mean,
yeah.
Okay, spoiler alert. She's going to fail in her quest to kill Penguin. I don't think anyone's surprised by that. But watching her try, I think, is going to be worth it. Because that kind of hatred, it doesn't die.
Mm-mm. Well, and it's getting deeper and deeper.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with those... Again, kind of dabbling back in Pengi's story here a little bit about how he just gets into his own, yeah, he believes his own propaganda way too much.
Yeah.
That moment that he had with Fish when he's like, yeah, I was playing you all along and you never knew it. And that realization that she had, I'm like, you just opened up a whole new can of worms that you did not need to bring on you, Penguin, because
yeah,
like all along, like how Jada Pinkett Smith has been saying, Fish is playing the wrong game. She's not playing, doesn't know about the game that she really needs to play. She knows now. And yes. She's gonna become.
And that is what? The fact that I'm most excited about. Mm-hmm. Right now, she knows what kind of a game she needs to be playing.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no unknown factor that's going to mess up with her plan. Because she knows the scoreboard, she knows the chess pieces. There is no unknown factor that's going to mess it up.
Right. The only unknown probably factor Jim, but is save Butch. That was it. Butch is the only unknown. I need Butch to be okay because Butch, well, he's Butch. We love him.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to say this once. If he doesn't survive, I am going to single-handedly start hashtag Butch lives. Because what Coulson taught me is that if you deny a character's death long enough, he comes back to life. So hashtag Butch lives.
That's an old soap opera trick there, too. I had that in the soap operas. And I love how we had, I mean, again, I've got to give props to our Falcone because that was such a fabulous scene.
Mm.
We still end up talking about Butch at the end. So we love you, Drupal.
Yes, we do.
That's my Dylan Bruce moment there. Okay, so that was our crime side. Now let's go to the cops side. We've got Jim and Bullock and all of this stuff there. Jim trying to get back on the force. We now have seen our commissioner, Peter Scolari, is playing our big commissioner, which I saw him and going, Jim's going to have your job in a few years. Ha ha ha. But I love you, Peter, but ha 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 ha.
I'm pretty sure that the commissioner is on the take. Come on.
Of course.
But I have to tell you, the scene where Bullock was trying to get Jim out of the precinct, it was too late, sidestep. This is the thing. Those two episodes were something of a two-parter for me. The first episode, I called it the terrible, no good, very bad day for Bullock, because nothing worked out for him. He wanted to, you know, help Jim escape. That failed. He wanted to be on the good side of the commissioner by saying that he has absolutely no rebellious streak in him. That didn't work. He had 24 hours to keep his partner. That almost didn't work because they almost all died. So it was Bullock's very bad, no good, terrible day. And then there was the episode two, this part two of it, which was Fish's terrible, no good, very bad day. So this was a two-parter, and in a way, I'm glad for our technical difficulties because we got to talk about them as a whole. But yeah, it was a terrible day for Bullock.
So you're saying that as a two-parter of the terrible
day,
bad,
yeah.
Good day, whatever. I used to work in kids' books, and I still can never remember the title correctly. Which
it's a terrible, no good, very bad
it's Alexander
day.
Book. For me, it was a two-parter of The Two Sides of Jim, because I loved him in that first episode, what Little Bird told him. I love the fact that I'm, you know, give me 24 hours, and I will get this done, and I will get him in. And then Bullock's looks like, okay, so what's the plan? He goes, I don't know. I'm just making it up. It was very Indiana Jones, and it was very, you know, the good side of his gung-ho cop. And then this last episode where he keeps doing that old Jim thing again, he's believing his propaganda and he's just pushing and pushing, and everybody's saying, back off a little, you know, that just chill a little bit. I mean, it worked out for him in the end, but he's not listening to everybody else. And I'm like, okay, you're acting like you're the commissioner now. You're still a cop. You're not even the chief. You're not even Essen yet, but you're acting like you're the commissioner and can order everyone around and just do whatever without any consequence. And it's to the point now where I don't like that as much, because he does have things to lose. When he started doing that at the beginning of the season, he was the lone cop. It's like, you have Bullock now. You have Essen. You have people in the PD, just like she said, that are on your side. So it's like, you got to think a little bit more about the people that are on your side and not just be blasting through everything. It worked out for him in the end. And I'm glad that he stuck up for the guy, Winkler, who was killed in his protection, basically.
Yeah.
And that we got a little bit more there the Arnold Flask. Now, real quick on the Arnold Flask thing, did you think at all that this would have been a great time to maybe have a resurgence of Montoya and Alan? Maybe see them? We're talking about bad cops and IA. I know they're major crimes, but this is a major crime and it involves a bad cop. And I'm like, this to me seemed like a place for them.
I was surprised that with such a huge high profile thing, Montoya and Alan, who are, you know, the only honest cops in Gotham, trademark, weren't there. I mean, I get it that they are not exactly IA, but when they suspected Jim of being a dirty cop, they went at him. Mm-hmm. And suddenly,
right,
almost the entire narcotics division, department, whatnot, is dirty and they are nowhere in sight.
It's not because a cop killed a bad guy, because they were, Montoya and Allen were going after him because he killed Cobblepot, supposedly. And we have this whole thing and manhunt. Like you said, here, this is the entire narcotics division that's got dirt on their hands.
And our honest cops aren't anywhere in sight.
Whatever.
Yeah. It's
drugs. No one's died.
Then again, I would feel like the episode was kind of crowded. Because there were a lot of people. But going slightly back to Jim and his righteous indignation, I did tell you some podcasts ago that it looks good on him. He does righteous indignation really well. And it looks good when he does it. But it's kind of... I feel like... And I don't know if it's the writing or Ben McKenzie's acting choices. I don't know where it comes from. But sometimes it feels like too much. And not that we got too much of it content-wise and quantity-wise. But that he gets his dialogue and goes a little too far. You know?
He chews the scene a little too much.
Adding too much, too much pathos to what he's doing and to the way he's saying things to, you know, preacher, we cannot do this, we are cops, blah, blah, blah. And it's a little too much. I feel like if he pulled it back a little, it would be much more natural and much more believable. So,
and
I
think
it would
set him
much
better on that whole path of being the future commissioner, the future leader, that you don't have to be, come on, everybody, let's get together. You know, a little bit more quiet and controlled and inspire them to join without having to rally the troops.
I do think that my problem with those scenes is that it's such a difference between what we saw of Commissioner Gordon in other material that we got, you know, in the movies, in the recent ones and the old ones. It was such a difference, because there is no way to compare anybody to Gary Oldman and the way he does things. But it's a character. The character is so different. So, I'm all for watching Jim's journey from being this righteous, oh my god, let's make a speech and rally the troops and be a little too much, to pulling it back and learning to control himself, to be a little more calculated. Because I think that the final scene in this last episode, when he realized how Penguin got the evidence and the confession, and that it was Jim's doing, it was on him, and what he this I saw the realization on his face, and huge props to Ben for this, because you could see the moment he realized what he has done, and then he didn't really have the right to be so righteous and to be on the moral. He lost the higher moral ground, basically, in this episode.
Right.
It was amazing because I feel
he was
like
so blinded with the result. He was thinking, I need to get to this end by any means. And now he's seen, when Delaware was begging, not my wife, not my kids, that the means for him don't justify the ends.
Yeah. It's going to teach him so much. And let's hope he's not going to suffer the Penguin syndrome of one step forward, two step back thing. Because that was such an important and crucial, pivotal even, moment for him.
I'm hoping it's a growing pain for him. That he's still not used to having that backup. Of having those people that have his back, that are in the fight with him. Like Harvey, which I just look at him and see how Harvey is just really wanting to be a part of this. He's still holding on to the old thing, you know, and I can't remember how he described it to him, you know, when he was trying to tell Jim to back off for his own good kind of thing, and how Jim is just like blazing ahead and Harvey is like really dealing with that fire that's right in front of him, because Harvey still doesn't know how to look at the bigger picture down the line. But he so wants to be there with Jim, and he so wants to be a part of that. And I think Jim needs to not fall back like Penguin does, but take those steps back to help get everybody up to him. You know, I need to drop back and bring you guys all up to me. Not fall back and do bad, like Penguin does, but bring you all back up to me. Because he has this thing, like, have you noticed when he's just playing that slightly uncomfortable, like, I don't know how to talk to you kind of thing, that Ben does this kind of funny look, like, it's like he doesn't know how to do mild discomfort, but the major discomfort, like when he was being, you know, please don't hurt my wife, was beautiful. It's those minor discomforts that he's not quite sure how to do yet.
Hey, I have every faith in him, because he really does brilliant job of being Jim Gordon and doing all this. I am all on board to watch his journey to become commissioner. Come on. He became Jim Gordon for me. But there are like those tiny little things that make it not as perfect as it could be. Basically.
Yeah.
And I am willing to overlook them because they deliver such a delicious character.
As long as we keep seeing that constant building, that he's not being perfect, he's not following the I do this step and then this, where it's just a little too perfect, a little too easy, where he is having those stumblings trying to become what we know he eventually will be with Commissioner Gordon. I'm fine with those stumbles. I don't want the full fallbacks.
The stumbles are okay because they allow for Bullock and Essen to teach him, kid, seriously, take a breath.
Exactly.
Relax.
A little bit of a chill pill.
Yeah.
A little bit of a chill pill.
Look at Bullock. He doesn't want to be in the room with you being all righteous and all that, because in those moments, I can see on Bullock's face, why am I here? What am I doing? Why do I do this to myself? It just, those are the moments when he's like, seriously, I could have just walked away from the kid, but no, no. I
What I think is funny in comparing these two is that look on Bullock's face in the most recent episode and his utter joy at having his partner back.
Yes.
And, yay, you're back! You know, I was just like so happy. You know, I was like, hey, yeah, I got my best bud back. And I was like, oh, what are you doing? What are you doing to me, Jim?
Yeah, it was I was so happy that you're back. Why are you doing... It's like,
exactly.
This is, I think, what's going through Bullock's head every time Jim does this. It's like, why are you doing this to me? Like, Bullock doesn't care about the things that he doesn't care yet. He's going to learn to care about those. But right now, it's like, why are you doing this to me? It's like personal slight. That Jim does this to annoy Bullock. Jim doesn't do it to clean up the police department. No, he does this to make Bullock's life more difficult. Exactly. I am telling you, this is...
I'm trying to decide how much, too, I want the two of them to really start getting involved in each other's non-police lives. You know, like, how do I want them to go much beyond this? Do I want Jim to kind of know? Because that whole scene, I started thinking about that scene with Bullock and Fish.
Mm-hmm.
When he's sending her off and they do the kiss. Do I want Jim to know about that other side more than just when, you know, Bullock thought he was going to die, so he brings the woman and the booze over to Jim's apartment. Hey, one last party before we die tomorrow. You know, more than just that persona that Bullock puts out
there.
Do I want Jim to know that? And do I want Bullock to be involved in the Jim personal side beyond just, hey, I heard you and Dr. Tompkins were making out?
I don't think they are ready for this.
Yeah.
Either of them. I don't think Bullock is ready for this sort of, I don't want to say intimacy, but it is. This romanticized cop partners kind of trope that is so present in everything that we have right now. I don't think he's comfortable with that kind of intimacy, and I don't think Jim would have to cut back on the righteousness and the judgy looks that he gets right now before he would be ready to actually be Bullock's friend outside of the job.
Right.
They are not ready. Let's do this, you know, the slow burn kind of thing. When they get there, it's going to be glorious. But baby steps. Baby steps.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see that. I'm liking how they're building and that they're really becoming a cohesive unit. I think Jim needs to realize that he's creating a cohesive unit. He's not just on his own. Trying to rally people. It's like, you've got the people. You just have to be a little smarter about it. I brought it up a little bit there. Okay, so what did you think about the whole little thing? We have Bullock kissing Fish, and we have Jim kissing Lee.
I'm not sure how to say this without being mean.
Oh, go ahead.
I am.
You're safe. You're among friends.
Make an effort, because while Bullock's kiss with Fish kind of brought something more to their dynamic, because we knew that they had a history. We knew they were close. We didn't know the details.
Even though she's tried to kill him.
Yeah,
been okay with him dying, yeah.
But their dynamic was so complex, and it was this give and take, push and pull, that the kiss at the end added something valuable to the entire dynamic. While the kiss between Jim and Lee felt more like, hey, let's establish that our hero is heterosexual. Boom! Yeah, let him kiss Morena Baccarin. That's going to be straight. Like, that's going to scream straight. So, that's...
I mean, not that if anybody was given the opportunity to kiss Marina, they wouldn't take it, but...
Yeah, but story-wise, it felt, you know, kind of pointless. What's the point?
Yeah.
What was the point? It's not going anywhere. And it's not even, they don't have this, romantic chemistry. I don't see that. I don't see any kind of romantic chemistry between them. So, basically, right now, I was excited when Morena was cast in Gotham, because she's brilliant. And I was excited when they gave us the character breakdown of who she's going to play and what's her connection. And I was convinced that her connection would be to Bruce.
It could still be.
It could still be, but her her introduction was so out of the blue, kind of what's... I don't understand why she's there. If she works at the female world, what was she doing in the male world? Okay, so they explained that. It's just, no, the whole kiss and their interactions outside of the, you know, the actual plot with what was going on in the asylum was kind of, yeah, if you cut it out, the story wouldn't lose anything.
You know what I really kind of thought? I really thought of you when I was watching this, because you and I have talked about things like this, and this is something that we have said is really pretty much becoming endemic in Gotham. Here we have this character that from some of the canon, and something that really excited you and me when I read that canon, was how Lee Tompkins is associated with Bruce, and then becomes possibly romantically involved with Alfred. We were both very excited about this. This, though, seemed like I hope they still are going that way. We need some other connection to Bruce. It seems like they're trying to connect her to Jim, whether to solidify a Bruce-Alfred, her thing with Jim, and keep Jim in that whole Wayne loop.
Mm.
But it seemed like they were... When the way they've introduced her, the way they were doing it, let's do sexual tension. Hey, he's hot. Hey, she's hot. So, of course, they've got to get together. And, oh, look, we have Barbara on the outs. And we have the whole thing with Jim and Barbara and Montoya. So let's add another one in there so it becomes a quadrilateral. We've got three hot women and Jim. And we're going to add, you know, do this tension. And, I mean, I know it's been probably, what, 2 months now? 6 weeks, 2 months since Barbara left him?
Yeah.
But I'm like, yeah, going for the instant hot kiss, I can't keep my hands off you kind of thing, with no real reason other than they're both attractive people, just seemed so gratuitous. And please
pointless.
Move past this.
Pointless. It was like...
Pointless. It's like, we have hot Marina here. What do we do with her? Well, of course, hot Marina should be kissing someone. No, hot Marina should be doing her awesome acting skills.
Yeah.
Make you just suck right into whether she's being a good guy or a bad guy or I mean, everything I've seen her in, I've totally bought her in. And she can do so many different things. It's like, don't flop her into this role of, oh, hi, I kiss the hero. No.
Yeah, basically what they did was they watched Firefly where she played the hooker, basically, and decided, yeah, she can be a love interest for our heterosexual main character. We gotta have the, you know, straight power there. Just saying, whatever.
I am holding out for her and Alfred. I really am. Sean Pertwee, I am holding out for you, because that was
He deserves. He deserves to get some. So,
I would love to see those two going head to head. So much. They are fabulous. And yeah, give her something, a point to being in the story instead of these little drop-ins. I mean, you know, like back to, real quick to the Montoya and Alan, we had this opportunity where we could have dropped them into the story and it made sense, yet we're dropping in Barbara and we're dropping in Lee when they're not really making sense. We're missing characters that would have made sense to bring in somehow and putting in characters into this that right now aren't making sense. And they need
so
to. I mean, Lee makes sense mixing with Bruce because of Arkham, and Bruce is getting into this whole Arkham thing as well with his big wall of stuff, and you know, she's tough and Alfred's tough, and so that makes sense, but we're not there yet. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, basically.
I don't know.
I'm right there with you.
Which I'm glad about, because then you won't hurt me.
Yes.
You scare me sometimes.
This is how our friendship operates. She's terrified of me, what else? And I rule the world.
What else on these two episodes?
Let me think. I think we covered everything. I am enjoying the bigger presence of Essen.
Yes.
When she started and it was like, come on, you have this amazing character with such potential. Do something with her. And they are doing it. And I'm so happy. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
Even if it's just supporting Jim. But come on, her support as the chief carries a lot more weight than Bullock's.
Well, and I like her playing with Bullock. Her and Bullock are getting it. They're both going, we're on your side. Play a little bit with us. You know, don't make us, don't pull us over into here. Realize we've got something to contribute here too. And so they're backing each other up. And I do like that. Yeah. She's getting less, inconsequential.
Yeah. I like that, she is becoming more and more important and basically, you know, no, I like that there's more of her, and I hope that it's going to continue, because I think her role and Bullock's role is one, those two characters are one of the most important ones, really. I love Fish and I love the bad guys and everything, but I feel like what they do, Essen and Bullock, what they do, what they say, will and is impacting Jim the most. Because they are, right now, they are the closest thing he has to partners.
Yeah.
Even though technically she's in charge and Bullock is suffering through, why do you do this to me, Jim? But
You know what I would love to see?
Hmm?
I would love to see something that has Bullock and Essen and Montoya. And Alan, ooh, too, if he wants to join. He hasn't impressed me yet, I'm sorry to say. But I would love to see something with them.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, I love Jim, and I know this is Jim's story. But even when it's your story, there's times that you kind of need to step back a little bit and let your team shine. And I would love to see somehow the three of them come together, because I think that would be an interesting dynamic, because they all are now on the good side and they all have different ways of dealing with various things, and they're all just different things that they bring to the table. I'd love to see Renee and Essen and Harvey somehow, something together. I don't know. I think it's kind of cool. And Alan, he can join in. Yeah. Poor Alan. We're getting so many characters that it gets tough, because you want them all to have something to do. You want them all to be relevant. But if you pack, like you were saying, this last episode was so packed that, you know, what do you do? How do you add somebody like Montoya and Alan who would have made sense when the episode's so packed? Mm-hmm. And we didn't even talk about Arnold Flass, and I don't even want to, because that's Balloon Man story that it's like, yeah, that's supposed to be our main story. Whatever. We know that the main thing really is the character development and all this, and Flass doesn't mean anything, really.
Yeah.
We're getting so many characters. I mean, we still haven't seen Harvey Dent in a long time, which I'm fine with, even though I love you, Nicholas. You're a great actor, all this. And we have the previews for next week. A new threat is coming in a two-part event. We have the fearsome Dr. Crane followed by the Scarecrow. I wonder who Dr. Crane is. So we're introducing yet another one of our classic baddies coming up. Gotham is getting really crowded.
No, seriously. I've said this before so many times, that the biggest problem that Gotham writers have, among other things, because I could pointing out what's wrong with people and what they're doing, is one of my favorite pastimes. But one of the problems that they have is they are suffering from this syndrome of, let's introduce a big name and put a twist in it, because it's not Batman yet. And it's No, it's just basically enough is enough. I said that when they introduced Harvey. That it was, okay, it's getting ridiculous, guys. You're not developing the characters you did introduce. You're not doing any favors to the characters you don't know what to do with, but you introduced them, so now you have to suffer. But you know what's going to fix that problem? Introducing another character.
Yeah. Well, and to me, I just see more of the Jack Gruber thing happening, where we were so excited.
So psyched.
About Jack Gruber, not because of the character Jack Gruber, but because of how they set him up and the actor that's playing him, and Christopher Heyerdahl. I hope I have that right. He was so good and so delicious, and I was so excited. And then we get to the next episode, and I'm like,
and it all fizzled out.
That was disappointing.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel the same with Harvey. Remember, that was Harvey Dent. That was such a big thing. That was a big event. We're introducing Harvey Dent. And nothing. We haven't even heard his name mentioned. You know, it's not like they do that off-camera thing of, you know, well, yeah, Dent is doing all this stuff over in the DA's office. You know, not even a one-line mention, so he stays in there. It's like, yeah, he doesn't matter. We don't care. And now we're going to get, you know, the Scarecrow in there. I'm like, you still haven't figured out how to handle Penguin. You've got Fish on the run. Are you bringing in Scarecrow because Fish is on the run? She's off for a couple episodes. And it's a two-episode event, so does that mean we're going to have another thing like Jack Gruber, where it's going to be really great the first episode and then fall flat the second?
No, seriously. I feel the need to link people to Jon Stewart and his segment of I give up.
Yeah.
Because, honestly,
I was wondering where you're going with that, but yeah.
I give up. I give up. I don't know how else to... It's going to be another podcast where we say that, yeah, enough is enough. But how many times can we say the same thing of the same thing that doesn't work for us? And I know we have absolutely no say in how things are run on Gotham, but I wish somebody could, I don't know, go into the writer's room and explain to them that, honey, watch Arrow, watch The Flash. They know how to do superhero stuff. Hell, watch Agent Carter or the second season of, you know, the competition that's Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You know what watch I something. Think it is? Is these writers are so infatuated with the entire Batman universe that they're just so excited to keep introducing things. And I'm like, you know, sometimes the best presents are doled out. You don't get everything all at once. It's not exciting. You know, when you get all the great toys on Christmas morning, they don't have that same meaning as if you, like, Catwoman is going to have more meaning because you are really doing this slow build on her. But just introducing somebody, it's going to, I'm scared that we're going to keep having Balloon Man after Balloon Man after Viper after Balloon Man, that, and it's going to become the big guys that we don't care about anymore.
Maybe that's the problem that they can fix in season two, which I hope, you know, is going to happen. Maybe what they need to do, actually, is to hire writers that would be excited to write Gotham and not Batman.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that line. Yeah, that's exactly what they need to be doing. We're not supposed to... Don't be writing towards Batman, right? You know what's supposed to... Yeah. Your end game maybe is supposed to be, but focus on what you're writing, which is Gotham.
Write Gotham, and not Batman.
And be excited about it. Yeah.
That's the line that we should end with, I feel.
Definitely. Well, actually, the line that we should end with is, please make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. You can use the link on our website, and you can also find us on various other podcast platforms of your choice. But we like iTunes because, you know, we have our links and everything there. Make sure and follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks, and tell us what you thought of these two episodes. We didn't do too bad. You know, we're going to be just under an hour and a half, but hey, it is two episodes. Tell us what you think. You can email us, sci-fi4chicks@sci-fi4me.com, or call the hotline at 573-427-2434, also known as 573-42-SCI-FI. And make sure to go over to sci-fi4me.com to check out Jason's reviews of Gotham, see what the boys think compared to what we think, as well as going over to the Sci-Fi for Me radio show Rogues Gallery, which is talking all about the DC universe. And so they talk about more than just Gotham. Also talking like Arrow and all that as well. But, you know, see what they think as well and see if they're right like we are about how Gotham is, because we're right.
Oh, we are.
Right, Alex?
We are.
We are so right. We will be back next week. There's a promise I'm making. Barring technical difficulties, we will be back next week to talk about another episode of Gotham, which will be the first of the two-parter. We'll find out about Dr. Crane. Again, I wonder who Dr. Crane could be. Is Frasier? Frasier's coming to Gotham? We're going to have a self-help guru?
La, 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 la.
That would be fun. Thank you so much, Alex, and thanks to our listener. Okay, Alex, again, what is the line that we're going to end this episode on?
Be excited to write Gotham, not Batman.
Nothing more to be said. Thanks a lot. See you next time. Bye-bye.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.